everyone. Good morning and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is Nick Wright. This right here is Chris Kent.
What up, man?
What's going on, brother?
Good to see you.
We're so close. It is Friday, which means the next time we see you, we'll be live from the home of Super Bowl 54 in Miami, first thing Monday morning. But first, we got a bunch to tackle on the program today. We're going to dive right in and start with Chiefs all-everything quarterback Patrick Mahomes, who has been nearly unstoppable in his two games this postseason, over 600 yards passing, 8 touchdowns, 0 interceptions, all while averaging 43 points per game, prompting offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy to say, quote, every play is designed to score a touchdown. All right, Nick, I ask you, you think the Chiefs' offense will just be too much for the Niners' defense?
If Patrick Mahomes has time to throw, it absolutely will be. If he has time to throw, then the Chiefs offense will do what it's done throughout this postseason, what it's done throughout the last 2 years, whenever Patrick Mahomes has been fully healthy, which is run up 30-plus points and run away from the opposition, assuming the defense can at least handle its grounds temporarily or at least for small sections of the game. But what Eric Bieniemy said is exactly right, and it's refreshing to hear honesty from an offensive coordinator, from a coach, as opposed to what we heard some of the time last year and even early in this year, which is this idea that it is part of the Chiefs' offense's responsibility to help the defense by somehow slowing it down. So don't score as quickly as you can. It's nonsense. It is the offense's job until you are in the final quarter of the game when you start playing situational football to score as often and as quickly as possible. If you can have one play, 75-yard touchdown drives, awesome. It is in line with when Travis Kelce before the year said, guess what we're going to do? We're going to pass when you think we're going to pass. We're going to pass more when you think we're going to pass. And when you think we're going to run, we're going to pass anyway. That is what this team does. And I think he also schematically, Bieniemy is correct in that in almost every passing play they have, I'm sure one of those routes is a home run route. Mm-hmm. It doesn't always mean you take the shot. And I think Mahomes has done a better job this year, particularly on third downs, understanding I don't always necessarily want to go for the 40-yard gain if the 8-yard first down is available to me to continue to keep the offense on the field. But this offense in 2 years, Canty, when Patrick Mahomes has been healthy, has not been stopped. They've lost games, but it has not been because the offense didn't do its job, except for the game against the Colts back in week 4. And that was, of course, when Patrick Mahomes came in with an injured ankle and got his ankle re-injured during that football game. So, yeah, the only way to slow down this offense is that Niners front get to the Chiefs repeatedly. To me, that is their best, if not their only hope for this football game if it's going to be keep the Chiefs under 30.
No, you're absolutely right. If Pat Mahomes has time to throw the football, it's a wrap because you're not going to slow down this offense. I mean, you heard the defensive coordinator for the 49ers say that the skill position players for the Chiefs are like a 4x1 Olympic relay team. So, I mean, this is a situation where you know that they're supremely talented at the skill positions, and this offense can score in bunches. They've demonstrated that. It's been one of the most explosive offenses since Pat Mahomes has taken over. And even though Pat Mahomes this year doesn't have nearly the amount of touchdowns that he had in his MVP season, he has a better touchdown to interception ratio. Yep. So I think that Eric Bieniemy's comments speak to the trust that they have in Pat Mahomes. And I think that's important because this time of year, when you're leading up to the Super Bowl, you want to try to instill as much confidence in your players as you possibly can, recognizing that this is the biggest game for most of the guys in their entire football career.
I was going to say, so the Niners defense were already tasked with stopping Russell Wilson. They stopped Aaron Rodgers. And I know that this is in a completely different category, especially the way Mahomes is playing in the postseason. Is there anything they can take from a guy who was very accurate in Rodgers and a guy who was very mobile in Russell Wilson that they could bring into this game?
Well, the difference is the weapons that the Chiefs have, and they have a better quarterback than those guys. Like, they played the Seattle, to your point, twice in the regular season. They deal with Kirk Cousins in the first round of their first round run of the playoffs, and then Aaron Rodgers. The only team amongst those three that has what I would even consider top five, top six in the league receiving core is the Vikings, but the Vikings also have the weakest of the four quarterbacks we're discussing here by, I think, a substantial margin. And that's not even a knock on Cousins. When you're comparing yourself to Mahomes, Rodgers, and Wilson, it's tough company to be amongst that top three. The Chiefs are, in modern football, I heard Dusty, our statistician, saying this before the show, and I think it's a really smart point. Steph Curry would have been a great basketball player in any era, but he came into the league in the perfect era. Patrick Mahomes, his ability to throw the football translates to any era. You can go back to the early 80s and Dan Marino, any what I would call almost football live ball era, any of the post-merger era. But he's perfect for this era. Wide open, throw it around the yard, rules that help protect the quarterback and help protect the receivers. And you're seeing it thus far this postseason. Seth Kaiser had this tweet. I couldn't believe it, so I looked it up. It's accurate. The Chiefs have had 18 real drives this postseason. By 18 real drives, I mean when the game's in doubt. Mm-hmm. So we're not talking about the very end of the game when you're trying to run out the clock or just you're up 17, you're just trying to grind clock. Those drives have ended 12 times in a touchdown, once in a field goal. The five punts after drops. No defense has actually forced the Chiefs off the field when they've been trying to score touchdowns. They, one time they were held to a field goal, five times Patrick Mahomes put the ball on a receiver and he dropped it. That's how the Texans game began. The Titans game started with a drop like that. So someone's got to show me they can stop this fully healthy, fully rolling Chiefs offense before I'm going to believe that they actually can do it.
Yeah, that's the thing. You got to see them actually do it because nobody has been able to do it when Pat Mahomes has been fully healthy. Nick, you talked about it earlier in the week. He hasn't played a bad game. In 31 starts, he's only had two games where he's thrown more interceptions than touchdowns. And, oh, by the way, they won those two games. So, I mean, Pat Mahomes is a special, special player. And to me, the only way that the 49ers can slow this Chiefs offense down is by hitting the quarterback and trying to throw off the timing of the passing game. But, I mean, in terms of what Eric Bieniemy and Andy Reid have done and in the level of trust that they've demonstrated in Pat Mahomes, I think that that's something to be said for that, the synergy between coach and player, because every quarterback sees plays differently, and the fact that Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy have an understanding of how Pat Mahomes processes information and sees the game, I think it's created this perfect marriage, this perfect blend of physical ability but also football IQ, and you're seeing that they're able to take that from the meeting rooms and the practice field to the actual games, and it's very rare when you have that kind of combination.
I got one question for you, though, Canty. What would you define as slowing them down? Like, what right now today, if they were being honest, Robert Saleh, D coordinator, Kyle Shanahan in a room, if we can sign up right now and guarantee the Chiefs score X amount of points, they won't score one more, one less, what do you think they would take? Go ahead.
If you could hold them under three touchdowns, that would be unbelievable.
Oh, well, that would be exceptional. Yeah. I think they'd sign up for 27.
Yeah, anything in the 20s.
Anything in the 20s. I think that right now, if you said the Chiefs will score 27 points, the Niners say, okay. Like, we will absolutely take that. I think slowing them down.
But that's three touchdowns.
Okay, yeah, no, agreed. I didn't know if you meant exact like 21. Anything under 30, and I feel like you slowed this Chiefs team down, which is very ahistorical for. Usually you feel like you're a defensive player. Mm-hmm. Slowing a team down is keeping them in the teens. Yep. For the Chiefs, I think it's keeping them in the 20s.
On to the 49ers. Ever since Jimmy Garoppolo threw an interception in the divisional round against the Vikings, Kyle Shanahan has tweaked the play calling just a little. And by just a little, we mean 15 pass plays to, wait for it, 72 run plays. 15 pass, 72 run. It's good to be balanced. Nick, you think Kyle Shanahan trusts Jimmy G heading into the Super Bowl? Should he?
Well, I wouldn't if I were him, and I can't speak to what Kyle Shanahan thinks or believes. I can just speak to the evidence. In week 17, they played as big of a regular season game as one can play, aside from winning you're into the playoffs. But this might actually, Super Bowl-wise, been a bigger than that type of game. Usually, if you're in a winning you're in game in week 17, you're not that good of a team. You could, in theory, go on a run, but it's rare. It was the one seed or the five seed. And in that game against Seattle, he trusted Jimmy Garoppolo to the tune of 22 pass attempts. Then he played an even higher leverage game, divisional round, against the Minnesota Vikings, and he trusted Jimmy Garoppolo to the tune of 19 pass attempts. And then we know, famously, this past week, and this one I don't hold so much against Jimmy because they were gashing Green Bay on the ground to such a historic
margin. But still,
margin.
How many pass attempts?
8 pass attempts.
8.
The fewest in a playoff game in over 45 years. It was just the only things that look like it statistically are what the 73 and 71 Miami Dolphins did, which, by the way, they must not have had a hell of a lot of trust in Bob Greasy back then. I didn't realize how little Shula was like, nah, Greasy, we got this covered. But so the evidence says that Jimmy Garoppolo is break this glass in case of emergency, and we hope we're not in that emergency. And I understand, Canty, that his passer rating number is very good. There are a lot of stats that make you say, why wouldn't you trust him more? And I think the answer is turnovers. The answer is because he's turned the ball over 19 times this year, playing for a team where all turnovers aren't created equal. When you're a guy that is playing on a team that's constantly trailing or that has no offensive line, sometimes you're like, how much are we really going to blame the turnovers on you? They know you have to throw. They're ready for you to throw. They can't protect you. None of that's been the case for San Francisco, and he still managed to turn the ball over in more games this year than anyone other than, what is it, Baker Mayfield and Jameis Winston. So I think Shanahan knew against Seattle, Minnesota and Green Bay, if we play a clean game, there's not many ways for us to lose. Against Kansas City, they could play a clean game and still lose. So he might be forced into letting Jimmy Garoppolo throw it more than he's thrown it the last few weeks, but I don't think he wants to do that.
Well, yeah, I don't think Kyle Shanahan wants to have to answer the question of whether or not he trusts Jimmy G in the Super Bowl. I don't think he wants to ask himself that question in that moment. He would probably like the game plan to look more like what we saw last week in the NFC Championship game against the Green Bay Packers when you're able to run the ball for over 200 yards. Now, that's a perfect world scenario. We don't know if they're going to be presented that option because we don't know how the complexion of the game is going to unfold. But as far as trusting Jimmy G, I will say this. Kyle Shanahan has seen flashes of greatness from Jimmy G in critical moments, especially down the stretch of the regular season. You look at December football, it was essentially playoff football because the 49ers were fighting to try to have that first round bye and home field advantage throughout. I mean, there was that variance where they could be the 1 seed or they could be the 5 seed. And I go back to a divisional game they had against the Rams. And at the end of that game, tie ball game, less than 2 minutes to go, Jimmy G converts on not one, but 2 3rd-and-16s. One goes to Kendrick Bourne. Yep. The other one is a 46-yard bomb to Emmanuel Sanders to set up the go-ahead field goal. They end up winning the game. I mean, he's demonstrated that he's capable of doing it in those critical moments in the game. Now, I get it. A December regular season game is different from the Super Bowl in February. So how will Jimmy G perform when the lights are the brightest and the stage is the biggest? We don't have the answer to that question. But I'm sure that Kyle Shanahan doesn't want to answer the question of whether or not he trusts him.
I do think Jimmy Garoppolo's a different type of quarterback to evaluate than most quarterbacks that I would have in that like 10, 11, 12 range. Because his best is one of the 5 or 6 best quarterbacks in football. When it is all locked in for him, he throws a really good looking ball. The game against New Orleans, you saw what the ultimate upside with Jimmy Garoppolo is. Saw him have some monster games, albeit against really bad defenses in Arizona. And he actually played pretty well in one of the Seattle games, high leverage situations. So a lot of quarterbacks that are good but not great, it's because their ceiling's relatively low. I don't think Jimmy Garoppolo's ceiling is relatively low compared to his contemporaries. I think the problem is his floor is really low. The mistakes what is separating Jimmy Garoppolo from being a quarterback that I feel like you can totally trust, a quarterback that you do consider one of the better or one of the best quarterbacks in football, is the volume of mistakes that are totally preventable. The volume of throws where it's like, what are you seeing there in that spot in the waning moments of the first half of a playoff game? Why do you throw that pass? So sometimes with quarterbacks, it's like, I just don't think the upside's high enough. I think his upside's pretty damn high, but once you try to find that upside, you open yourself up to that, and the Niners are so well built and so good in the other facets of the game, they try not to open themselves up to that.
Can you blame Kenny, can you blame Kyle Shanahan for saying, hey, we're going to go with the best game plan? I don't care about feelings. I don't care about the way I feel about whoever, my run game or Jimmy G or whatever is going to, whatever it takes to win the game, that's kind of what I'm going to with. Even if it is, you know, 72 running plays and 15 pass plays, whatever it may be.
Well, Jenna, there are no style points. I mean, you're trying to win the game, and however you got to go about it, whatever gives you the best chance, that's what you're going to do. But I just find it hard to believe that you're going to be able to win a Super Bowl. Correct. Without your quarterback making some throws. I mean, we saw it last year in the Super Bowl where Tom Brady has less than 8 minutes to go, and he completes that big ball to Gronkowski that sets up the go-ahead touchdown run by Sony Michel. You're talking about a tie ball game at that point. It was 3-3. So, I mean, you're going to have to make some plays. Eli Manning to Mario Manningham, that last drive in Super Bowl 46. Your quarterback is going to have to make some throws in order to win you the big game. Can Jimmy G deliver under those circumstances? That remains to be seen. But to your point, there is a lot of variance in the performances that you get from Jimmy Garoppolo. Yes. And what separates good players from great players and great players from Hall of Fame players is the level of consistency. And that's the one thing that's eluded Jimmy Garoppolo since he's become a full-time starter. I know the record is 21-5 as a full-time starter and two, including the two playoff wins.
It's misleading.
But a lot of that has to do with the supporting cast being above average. I mean, you point to all the different areas of the 49ers football team, and you would grade all of those different position groups above average to excellent.
Well, and the I agree. Those, you don't care about hurt feelings. If he wins a championship, by the way, it'd be his third ring. He passes Eli, he passes Big Ben. We were talking about this before the show. Now, two of those rings, he didn't play at all, but they still all shine the same, I would imagine. You don't worry about, it's not about how he feels. It's about the fact you cannot beat the Kansas City Chiefs if your quarterback is not a major part of the game. You just can't. This, unlike last year, and you pointed this out earlier, they turn the ball over even less. Mahomes cut his turnovers in half, en route to cutting his touchdowns in half, also cut his turnovers in half, at least as far as interceptions go. They are the second highest this year, the second highest scoring playoff team going into a Super Bowl ever. Only the 1990 Buffalo Bills have scored more than the 43 a game the Chiefs are putting up thus far this postseason. You have to move the football through the air in order to beat them. They're not, if the Chiefs had lost to the Titans and it was a Niners-Titans Super Bowl, then I would say to San Francisco, roll out that same Green Bay game plan and see what happens. Let's have an old-school smash mouth. Derrick Henry's going to get 30 carries. Your running back trio's going to get 30 carries and see what happens. Don't make the mistake. They are going to have to, at some point, have a quick strike drive. They're going to have to convert those third and longs that you're talking about, and that's going to be on the right arm of Jimmy Garoppolo. I'm not saying he can't do it. I'm simply saying he is also likely in those spots to throw it to the guy wearing red, but the Chiefs are the team wearing red this weekend, and that's what they're trying to avoid.
All right, on to DecisionGate 2020, where will Tom Brady play next season? You'd assume that when you dedicate 20 years to a team, win them six Super Bowls, and take the hometown discount along the way, you'd have the liberty to weigh your options in the offseason. Well, you would be assuming wrong. Speculation is that the Patriots will not wait until the March 16th deadline for Brady's decision. Nick, should the Pats already be planning for a new quarterback next year?
Well, they seem to already be, you know, planning for the contingency. And, Jenna, I think you got it exactly right. Just add this to the pile, the mounting pile of disrespect shown to the greatest quarterback ever. People say I'm disrespectful to Tom Brady because I said he wasn't any good this year. But for, I have no ties to Tom Brady's done nothing for me. Tom Brady hasn't brought me championships, hasn't taken discounts to work for me, hasn't been the consummate teammate and pro with me. I've just enjoyed watching him play football until around Super Bowl IV got a little irritating. Like, enough winning, Tom. Come on. But except that the Patriots have been more disrespectful to Brady over the last 8 months, 9 months than I can ever remember a team being to one of their all-time greats who has been nothing but great to them. And it is, to me, it's noteworthy where this is coming from. Adam Schefter is one of the best in the world at what he does. But Adam Schefter also came up in Boston, has a lot of ties and I think still lingering relationships with the Patriots organization. So if he has informed speculation on this, I have informed speculation on where that's coming from. And the fact that the Patriots are trying to rush Tom Brady into this decision, the first time he's ever a free agent, basically saying, we need you to make your decision before free agency begins, when the only thing he got out of him this last contract negotiation was the opportunity to actually be a free agent. If I'm Tom, that's infuriating. Utterly infuriating that I asked to come back, I asked for a contract extension, you wouldn't give it to me. The one thing you gave me was freedom of movement this offseason, and now we're not even to the Super Bowl, and there's feelers being put out there that clock's ticking, better make my decision, better figure this out. That would bother me immensely if I were Tom or anyone close to him.
Well, I'm sure it bothers him. He's infuriated and he feels disrespected. But the one thing that he can also say is this is not something that he didn't expect, because this is how Bill Belichick has done business with all of the star players that have come through the Patriots during their dynastic run over the last couple of decades. Whether it's Richard Seymour, whether it's Vince Wilfork, it doesn't matter who it is. I mean, Bill Belichick usually moves on from you a year early as opposed to a year late. And you saw that a couple of years ago, Bill Belichick wanted to rip the Band-Aid off then and move on from Tom Brady and extend Jimmy Garoppolo and keep the dynasty pushing, but he wasn't afforded that luxury because Robert Kraft stepped in and superseded Belichick's authority. So it was a situation where the owner forced Bill Belichick's hand in terms of making sure that Tom Brady was going to remain the starting quarterback. I don't think it's happenstance that we're getting this information a day after we saw the clip from Robert Kraft on TMZ saying that he wants Tom Brady to be the quarterback in 2020 and beyond. So I think it's interesting, this whole dynamic and how this thing is going to play out. Ultimately, what the owner wants is probably what's going to end up happening. But I think there's going to have to be some give and take on both sides, with Bill Belichick probably paying Tom Brady a little more than Belichick would like to, but Tom Brady also accepting a little less than another team could give him on the open market.
But also, Nick, the Patriots just went through this when they waited perhaps a little too long to hear what Gronk was going to do with his decision, perhaps, you know, make it a little difficult for them to grab a tight end in the draft or trade for someone, and you saw what a void that left on their team. Perhaps they don't want to make the mistake that they made with Gronk, with Tom Brady, especially since they do need that quarterback position filled and filled
well. I understand why, if we remove the proper nouns from it and we just go position, quarterback position unsettled, want quarterback position settled as early as possible, of course that makes logical sense. But March 16th is well before the NFL draft. March 16th is the opening of the basic legal tampering period in the NFL. It's the very open of free agency. What if they need Brady to make a decision before then? What they are saying is, we need you to make your decision if you're coming here before any other team legally is allowed to even talk to you. We need you to choose this option before you know what your full breadth of options are. It's an outrageous request. And I understand the point, and a lot of, and you've made it before, and I think it's a smart one. We saw it happen with Richard Seymour. We saw it happen with Lawyer Malloy like a week before his season started, and the Bills ended up scooping him up. With respect to those players, ain't none of them Tom Brady. And so I would have thought he had, and I bet he would have thought, okay, I've graduated past the Patriot way, at least to a degree, and you're right that the owner will get what the owner wants, but I do wonder if Belichick is hard and fast in his belief on this, Canty, and if Belichick might also himself put the owner to a decision, which is, if you meddle in this again, you are choosing Brady over me. That it will be the fracturing moment in our relationship. And while you might believe, like Tom does, he's got 3 years left, how many years do you think I got left? How many years do you think I have left as the best coach in football? And then Robert Kraft is in a bit of a bind, because moving forward, Belichick's the more valuable piece because coaching doesn't age, obviously, the way quarterbacking does. TurboTax is here to help this tax season by making tax filing easier for you. They've made it their mission to give you all the tools and advice you need to get your taxes done with confidence, like making uploading your W-2 as easy as taking a picture. Just use your phone or tablet to simply snap a picture of your W-2, then watch your information appear in the right place in your tax return. You can be sure you're filing your taxes correctly while at the same time making sure you're getting the best possible refund. TurboTax, all people are tax people.
So So the Lakers won again last night, beating Brooklyn. LeBron James picking up his 10th triple-double of the season in the process as the Lakers are sitting pretty in first place out west. But the NBA trade deadline is quickly approaching, so as expected, LeBron was asked if the Lakers are one piece away from a championship team.
We have enough right now, but it's not about, you know, competing and worrying about June. It's about worrying about January. And if we continue to get better throughout January and then we move on to February and continue to get better, we're a really good team, but we're not a great team yet, and we shouldn't be. We're just now being put together in September, and from September to now, we're a better team. And if we continue this trend, then we'll put ourselves in a position where we can compete for a championship and have a chance. And in this league and in sports in general, all you want is a chance.
Kenny, is LeBron right that the Lakers have enough right now to win a championship?
I think they have enough, but I think LeBron was trying to make the point that they need to be process-oriented, not focusing on the end goal, but focusing on incremental improvement throughout the season. You're either getting better or you're getting worse. And so I look at this Lakers team. I mean, LeBron is having an outstanding year. In terms of him being able to distribute the basketball, it's a career year for him. And then Anthony Davis, I mean, Nick, you were talking about it. This guy has been playing like he's going to be defensive player of the year. So, I mean, from your superstars, you're getting what it takes to be able to compete at the highest levels. But I think you're looking at the supporting cast and seeing the other guys come along, in particular Kyle Kuzma. And I think that's the piece of this equation that has yet to come around. The Lakers have been looking for a third scoring option, and he just has not developed into that guy. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with him as the trade deadline approaches. But in terms of where the Lakers are at right now, they're five games in the win column ahead of Utah and the next closest team. So I think that they've given themselves enough cushion in terms of being able to set this thing up where you can give your star players, LeBron James and Anthony Davis, a little bit of rest once it gets time to gear up for the postseason. I think that's going to be important considering those players' age.
100%, and they're doing it the right way and the smart way, which is you're taking the regular season seriously. Not so seriously that if a guy's got an injury, you don't give him the night off, you make him play through it, but to where you can get the rest when it's most valuable, when it's closest to the postseason, and you might also get a little extra rest within the postseason because you're the one seed, you sweep out the eight seed, and you get a week off while these other teams are battling amongst each other. Your point on Kuzma was an important one, and I want to address that in a moment. But first, I want to remind the audience what a massive departure this is from things we've heard from LeBron in the past. LeBron famously, one year in Cleveland, said publicly, "We need a bleeping playmaker right before the deadline," meaning we need another ball handler. He, if you remember, after the Kyrie trade and then during the season, they remade that entire team, bringing in Jordan Clarkson, George Hill, all those guys. He, after the first game, with that new team, right in February, he came off the court screaming, "We got a bleeping squad now. We finally have a bleeping squad." Meaning, and he had made it very clear, he thought the team needed to tweak things. He's right that this is, for the first time really, you could argue since the second or third year in Miami, they have a fully formed championship-level roster as is. Mm-hmm. In the playoffs, you're going to go eight deep. LeBron, Danny Green, KCP, Anthony Davis, center of your choosing, Dwight or JaVale, pick one of them, mm-hmm. with a bench of Caruso, Kuzma, Bradley. There's your eight. That is assuming they are smart and they remove Rondo from the rotation, and that's without even Andre Iguodala coming over in the buyout market, which I think likely will happen. And then he'll be a ninth guy in your rotation. The question is Kuzma. Is he going to, A, mature? Because that's a real thing. Kyle Kuzma, you can't have your trainer out here saying the best player in the world doesn't work hard enough at his game, and then you seemingly co-sign it on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Like, if you want to be a goofball when it comes to your hair, fine. But when it comes to real professional adult basketball, you need to grow up a bit. You also need to grow up a bit on the court. Too often this year, the Lakers are in a two-on-one break, but Kuzma hasn't gotten his touches. So instead of making the right basketball play, he goes himself, and it doesn't work out well. That irritates veteran teams. games. That irritates teams that understand we have a bigger goal in mind. In Kuzma's defense, he's the one guy on the team that hadn't been paid, other than Caruso, of course. But, like, it's tough to ask a guy who's trying to prove himself in this league, trying to get a next contract, to be selfless. That's why championship teams very often don't rely on young players. If they are going to make a trade, it will be Kuzma. He's the only tradable asset they have. Could they use another shooter? Sure, the whole league could. Could they use maybe a ball handler to replace Rondo? Absolutely. But if they make no moves, they're the best team in the Western Conference, and the only team I believe that can throw a scare into them is the Milwaukee Bucks, who might be the best team we've seen in this league since the Warriors, well, other than the Warriors in a very long time. Mm-hmm. And so I think LeBron's right that they don't need to make a move. I also think the next couple weeks are critical for Kyle Kuzma in which direction he wants to go. You want to be a featured guy on a bad team and get a bunch of buckets, or do you want to be a part of potentially winning a championship in year three, which will lead to the financial rewards he wants so badly?
I would want the second one. I thought that was a much better option.
Well, I don't know that that's what he wants.
Here first things first, we're now joined by former All-Pro running back Brian Westbrook.
What up, man? Good morning,
Brian. Brody.
How's it going?
Man, get that ring out of here.
Come on, be done. What you mean?
He always wants to dap up with the ring hand.
No, I always dap up with the right hand. Yeah, okay. If I give you the left, that's my point. If I give you the left, I know you ain't right.
That's true.
You know what I'm saying?
I don't know what we're talking about.
Well, he's right. You can't shake someone's hand with your left hand.
Oh, I think, I mean, he would, like, hit, you'd punch him.
No,
I already said I didn't know. I shouldn't need to follow it up. I don't know. I didn't. Let's talk some football. That I do know. Super Bowl 54 gearing up to be a barn burner. Our friends over at Fox Bet have the Chiefs as 1.5-point favorites over the Niners. It's about as close as it gets for a Super Bowl matchup. All right, Nick, what's the biggest factor that you think will determine the outcome in this?
To me, this is going to be a great game, but it's a relatively simple game to analyze. There's one factor on each side of the ball that's going to determine it. When the 49ers have the ball, how dominant will that run game be? It's not going to be as dominant as it was against Green Bay. That was historically dominant. But even with this new and improved Chiefs defense, even with the defense that was, over the final third of the season, number one scoring defense, number one red zone defense, all these things, where they have been most improved is against the pass. They still are susceptible to teams running down their throat. What the Titans got out of that earlier than they probably should have, they were having success in it in the first half of that football game. So how dominant will the Niners' rushing attack be? And then on the flip side of the ball, will the Chiefs' offensive line give Patrick Mahomes time to throw? If they do, then I don't think the Chiefs can lose. If Patrick Mahomes has a clean pocket, because there are no good answers to the questions the Chiefs' offense presents, in the first playoff game, the answer that the Texans came up with is double Tyreek Hill. That led to Travis Kelce having one of the greatest games a tight end's ever had in the playoffs, and he did almost all of it in just a quarter of football. The Titans' answer was double Tyreek Hill and double Travis Kelce. The response to that was, hey, remember Sammy Watkins from week one of the season and from Clemson? And from he's still on the team. He will have the biggest game he had since week one, score his first touchdown of the season since week one, and have the play that iced the game. And, oh, yeah, by the way, Patrick Mahomes will lead us in rushing. Because if you're going to double two guys, you're not going to be able to keep the quarterback that mobile in the pocket. So the only actual answer is, make it to where he can't go to his third option, Sammy Watkins. Make sure he can't read the full defense. Those are the two things that will determine this football game. I don't expect, Brian, the Chiefs to all of a sudden start turning the ball over. I don't expect, Brian, the Niners to all of a sudden be like, you know what, Jimmy Garoppolo, this is your moment. We're going to ask you to throw the ball 40 times. I think we know what each team wants to do, and the question is, which defense is most successful in preventing
it? Yeah, we do know. We know exactly what the Kansas City Chiefs want to do, throw the football, and the 49ers, they want to run the ball. And that's why for the Kansas City Chiefs, the most important part is the offensive line. It really is going to dictate on both sides of the ball offensively what's going to happen. And so when you look at the Chiefs, they've only given up 3 sacks and 70 pass attempts in the postseason, which is phenomenal. And, of course, the 49ers, they attacked the quarterback. They've had 9 sacks in their 2 games in the postseason. And so this is why it's so important. If the Chiefs can protect their quarterback, that means they're going to score points. We know that. If the Kansas City Chiefs are able to score points, That's going to kind of take the 49ers out of that run game, that dominant run game. And if you're Kyle Shanahan, the one thing you don't want it to turn into is a quarterback competition. Mm-hmm. You want to say, Jimmy Garoppolo versus Patrick Mahomes. You want to say, hey, we still want to be able to run the football, keep the Kansas City Chiefs defense off balance, and make them think that we can at least run it so that we can get that play action pass, those types of things. But if Kansas City is able to protect Patrick Mahomes, that means that secondary of the 49ers is not as effective. That means that linebacker core probably doesn't come into play. And that means Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs will probably be Super Bowl champions.
No, you're absolutely right. That Chiefs offense is explosive. It's not a matter of if, it's only a matter of when. All you got to do is go back and look at the AFC Championship game last year where they were blanked in the first half and scored 31 in the second half. So we know that this offense can score in bunches. That's why, for me, the key to this game is turnovers. If you're the 49ers, being able to get off the field by being able to turn the football over, whether that's strip sacks, whether that's interceptions, after you disrupting the timing of the passing game by hitting the quarterback and pressing the receivers, whatever you can do to get off the field, that's what you have to do. You have to try to steal as many possessions as you can for your offense to allow your offense to play with strengths, which is running the football and not asking Jimmy G to be a volume passer. So for the 49ers, I think they have to protect the football and they got to try to create some turnovers. If you're the Chiefs, and you're that defense, if you can get Jimmy G to turn the football over, you know your offense can put points on the board. And if you can get up on the 49ers by double digits, then that's going to make Kyle Shanahan go away from the running game and force Jimmy G to win the football game. I think that's when the Chiefs would have the advantage.
And tell me what you guys think of this. I do think the Chiefs offense has one particular facet to it that could keep the Niners pass rush off balance. Because I think we all agree the Niners' biggest strength is where they've spent all their draft picks, where they have their best players, which is that defensive front. And the Chiefs haven't used it that much this postseason, but we've seen it a ton since Andy Reid's been the play caller there, which is the wide receiver pre-snap motions that end up in end arounds, the screen game to Damian Williams, or the wide receiver screen, those things that can make those edge rushers take an extra beat, wait, where am I supposed to go here? I think they are more equipped to really take advantage of those types of things than the typical high-scoring offense, because we've seen them do it year after year, even before Patrick was there. It was a staple of the Andy Reid, Alex Smith offense. It was a staple of their offense last season. They haven't used it quite as much this season, but I still think it's there for the taking if they want it.
Well, the Chiefs have that ability on the offensive side of the ball, but the one thing I will say is with the 49ers defensive line, especially those ends, they do a great job of setting the edge, not just in the pass rush, but also in the run game. You saw that against the Minnesota Vikings. They were able to set a hard edge, whether it was perimeter runs or Kirk Cousins trying to get out on boots. Same thing with Aaron Rodgers and Aaron Jones in the NFC Championship game. So I think that Nicky Bosa does that at a high level. And, of course, Dee Ford and Solomon Thomas, those guys can do a great job of being able to set the edge. So I would say that that would be a counter in order to slow down those edge rushers. But I just think that the 49ers are so fundamentally sound, especially those guys on the defensive line, it's going to be hard for that Chiefs offense to outflank those ends.
The one way that you get fundamentally sound defenses, and you're absolutely right about the 49ers, the one way that you kind of get them out of place and you take advantage of them is to make them think. Make them think and say, hey, maybe this is something new, something that I haven't seen. And so in these 2 weeks that you have between the championship games and the Super Bowl, Andy Reid has to come up with something that says, you know what, this front four, we have to make sure that they're saying, hey, I'm getting blocked from a different angle. Maybe I'm going to wham. I'm going to do different types of things so that you can't allow them to pin their ears back and get after the quarterback. And here's the other part. The 49ers defense, I don't think enough has been said about their linebacker core. They have fast-flowing linebackers that can tackle. And so on every level, the defensive line, linebackers, and secondary, they have very good players. And it's just hard to beat teams that have very good players on all three levels of the defense.
All right, time for us to go viral. So yesterday at the Pro Bowl, Lamar Jackson showed off his strength and accuracy, hitting the goalpost on a throw from 50 yards away. He was also interviewed by 10-year-old junior NFL UK reporter Braden Bent. Take a listen.
So I'm here with Lamar Jackson from the Baltimore Ravens. How are you?
I'm great. How you doing, Brady?
I'm very good, thank you.
Yes, sir.
I think 8's the best number, by the way, just to put that out there.
New beginning.
I think 8 is a very good number.
Yeah. It's there for new beginning. Yeah, that's why I like it. Number.
I like it a lot. You're in the Pro Bowl, which means you are the best of the best. But what else do you think you're the best at?
Oh, man, just being myself.
Being yourself.
Yeah, always
well,
being myself.
You can't go wrong with that, can you?
Can't at all.
England and America are good pals, right? Yeah?
Yeah.
We're good pals.
Yeah, we're good pals.
However, we say things different, like elevator for you is our lift. What? Do you know what a nappy is?
What's that?
A diaper.
What?
We call a nappy a diaper.
Okay, it's different. Yeah, it's different.
Lamar had no idea what he was signing up for. When he was like, oh, this is so cute, this little kid's getting angry. He's like, oh, existential questions about what's important to me. Okay, how you doing?
Little kids with accents, particularly British accents, I understand there's a whole country of people that speak that way.
And have
I love
kids.
It. I just love it. I just love it. I could listen to that kid talk.
Forever.
Forever.
Read
all day.
He's like a grown up. He sounds like a grown man in a little man's body.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Because, and I think that's just because
though?
He has
the
a
accent,
British
yeah,
accent.
Accent.
I think he's smarter and older than he actually is.
That's what happens. You throw the accent out there, and all of a sudden people think, you know, you're mm-hmm. smarter and more attractive.
Are you going to
really
throw it out
are.
There for us today?
Fine. Let's talk a little bit about your promo coach, Andy Reid. The last time, Andy was in a Super Bowl 15 years ago. Your Eagles came up short to the Patriots, and I'm sorry to revisit, but the good news is, for Andy at least, he gets one more crack, and that's next Sunday. So how does he feel about not yet getting that big win? Well, take a listen to this.
Life's bigger than that. Now, that doesn't tell you that I don't want to win. I don't want that to be, this is America, man. I'm in it to win. That's what we do. And that's how you're so I don't want that to be slighted. But I also understand, I have a perspective of life. Maybe it's my age now, but that doesn't mean I'm not going to, you know, work hard and coach hard, do all those things, and I'm in swinging. So the best of my ability.
Brian, I'll start with you. You played for Andy Reid. You know him. I worked with him for years. I love this man. I think he's a fantastic coach. How much does this drive him as your former coach? How much is this in his veins right now, getting ready for the big game?
It absolutely drives. I think it drives pretty much every coach, but in particular, Andy Reid, he's one of the hardest working coaches, men that I've never met. That's late nights, being away from your family, doing all the small things, the attention to detail that other people are not. And what drives those guys, those types of people, is being the best. And up to this point, Andy Reid has been in 5 NFC Championship games and 2 AFC Championship games, 2 Super Bowls he'll be able to play in this season, the second. And when you get into that realm where you're a great coach, we already know that. We already know that your credentials, you only had 3 losing seasons in 21 years that you've been coaching.
Say that again.
3 losing seasons in 21 years. I mean, that's just, and none in Kansas City, obviously, all 3 in
including
Philly.
His first year in Philly,
year
which really
bad.
Shouldn't be held against him. Nope. His last year, like, and 15 of 21 playoff appearances.
Amazing.
Absolutely. I didn't mean to interrupt, but just unbelievable, the level of consistent success.
So his winning, his success is clear. But here's a small thing. When you get into that upper echelon of coaches, of players, of anything, the rings do matter. I remember I was at the Super Bowl in Minnesota, and I was in the Legends Room, where basically all Hall of Famers. And they were talking stats and who's better in this. But at the end of the day, the conversation came down to rings. How many rings do you have? How did your teams do? And I think it's the same thing for coaches. At some point, you're going to ask a question. We know that you won a bunch of games. You know you've been to a bunch of championship games, and that's great. But how many rings do you have? And I think at the end of the day, Andy Reid, of course, he wants rings.
Yeah, the pinnacle of our sport is the Hall of Fame, but right underneath that is Super Bowl championships. I mean, that's what you have the conversation about.
That's what Jimmy Garoppolo's like, what's up, everybody? I got 2.
But, you know, Jenna, that's a big part of it. I mean, a lot of the conversation this week about Eli Manning retiring is he or isn't he a Hall of Famer? And the thing that probably puts him over the top is the 2 Super Bowl wins, the runs, and then the 2 Super Bowl MVPs. So, yeah, it feels like that's the only thing that's missing from Andy Reid's resume. But I got to ask you this, because you've been with Andy Reid as you're preparing for big games. What does he do in order to get his team ready to go under these circumstances? Because this is a different platform than the regular season. when you talk about championship games and Super Bowls?
The biggest thing, and really just in my life in general, when I've had attention to detail, I've been much more successful than any other time in my life. And so Andy Reid is one of those guys that preaches attention to detail. It's 10-yard route, not 9, not 11. It's, you know, you walk out the door, your shirt's tucked in, you look the right way. All those small things matter to Andy Reid. And really, you can't argue with the success that he's had that those things matter. And so in these biggest games, Andy Reid wants his best players to have their best games. And so he does everything he can to make sure that that happens. That starts with practice, the length of practice. And if you're hurting a little bit, and this happened to me a bunch of times, there were games where I just didn't have it. I couldn't practice the way that I wanted to because of my injuries and things like that. And he would say, listen, as long as you're good on Sundays, that's all we care about. We want to make sure that you're there. And so he always listens to the players, that attention to detail and the small things. The other big thing I think in this game is going to be his experience. His experience in this game and his ability to talk to the other guys on that football team, I think, are be critical as far as what goes on in the football game.
There's only five coaches in NFL history with more wins than him. There's only five coaches in NFL history with a better winning percentage than him. You already talked about the consistent level of excellence. I think, especially since what we saw happen with the Hall of Fame this year with a larger than average class, Bill Cowher getting in, Jimmy Johnson getting in, I think that Andy's got a case. Even if they don't win this game, he's a Hall of Fame coach. But what does it mean for him legacy-wise? To me, it's very simple. There are some coaches with Super Bowl rings that were not great coaches. There, I have no need to name the names here, but I think there's a few we can all think of. It's like, was he a great coach or is he just in the right situation? Did someone else build it up for him and then he came in?
Barry Switzer?
I'm not naming any names. I don't even know what you're talking about. I'm just saying there are some, but there are no all-time great coaches without a ring. Like, you can go one way, can't go the other. I think Andy Reid is already a great coach. What is the only thing separating him from all-time legendary status, from, you could argue, of post-merger football, being on the Mount Rushmore of coaches? Mm-hmm. You know, you could, if they win this Super Bowl, you could put his resume, you'd say, you'd have Knoll, you'd have Landry, you'd have Bill Belichick, and you would have Andy Reid. I'm leaving out Don Shula, so okay, maybe we got to expand the Mount Rushmore a little bit. Point being, certainly if they win this championship, he's the second best coach of the 2000s. That is undeniable. The only thing separating him from that type of discussion, from being in that class of coaches, is winning the game. And I think this is, with respect to your guys' team, I think this is the best all-around team he's had, the best position he's had to win a championship. And so I can only imagine, because I don't know him as well as Jenna does, certainly as well as you do, how it will feel for him if he can't cash this one in.
Well, can I speak to that for a second? All this week we've heard from Chiefs players, and to a man, they have all said, we want to win this for Andy Reid. And I know that's something you say, but in years past, we don't always see the first person you want to win this for as your head coach. You talk about the importance of winning it, which goes to show you that these guys are rooting for him the way it seems like fans are, and, you know, sort of fanage of the NFL is. And I just wonder if he needs to win the Super Bowl to sort of get the narrative off his back about how successful he is in the regular season, or has he done that really just by getting to the Super Bowl?
Well, I don't think he's done that and got that narrative off by just getting here again, because you have to win it to really get that narrative off. The other part that I think is true is that Andy Reid has a narrative that he doesn't do very good clock management in situations. Mm-hmm. And even if they win, that narrative still could be true. That narrative still could be like, well, they won because of Patrick Mahomes, not because of Andy Reid. They won in spite of some of the things that Andy Reid did. And so I think that he has a couple narratives that he can correct with his football game, and really it comes down to the quarterback's ability to throw the ball down the field. If that quarterback and Patrick Mahomes in that offense is explosive down the field and are successful, it's just going to be hard for the 49ers to keep up with them. And then Andy Reid is mentioned with some of the young guys that are saying the best offensive coordinators mm-hmm. in the league. I think you put him in that category already, but he's certainly mentioned in that category if they go out there and they put up a bunch of points against this very good 49ers defense.
Yeah, I think him winning the chip cements his legacy. I mean, Nick brought up the two coaches that are going into the centennial class. I mean, Andy Reid has a better win percentage than Jimmy Johnson, and he's coached twice as long as he did. And then, of course, he's right there win percentage with Bill Cowher, but he's got 58 more wins than Bill Cowher actually has. So, I mean, he stacks up favorably, but it just feels like that championship is the one thing that's missing. And keep in mind, one of his proteges, Doug Peterson, went and got a championship with the Philadelphia Eagles. So it just feels like for all of the coaches that have gone on and had success off of his coach's tree. It just seems like this guy deserves to have that championship, because I feel like that's the one thing that's missing.
Piece.
And he's got to have that in order to be considered one of the all-time great coaches in the modern era of football.
We go, a little in or out. Jimmy Garoppolo said he's going to try to transfer Tom Brady's Super Bowl approach to his own preparation because Brady's great. And Jimmy G even said he might call Brady for some advice. Kenny, you in or out on Garoppolo reaching out to Brady ahead of Super Bowl 54?
Jenna, I'm in. A lot about your performance in the Super Bowl and making sure that you're ready to go is how you handle the weeks leading up to it. And you'd have to have experience in order to do that. Jimmy Garoppolo watching Tom Brady do it not once but twice, I think that gives him a little bit of insight. It doesn't replace the experience, but I think that he's not starting from zero in terms of knowing what to expect leading up to the big game.
I'm in as well. I think that you, in this game, you try to get any advantage that you possibly can. I remember we played Arizona. This was a Thanksgiving game years ago. And Larry Fitzgerald called me and said, what type of cleats should I wear? And I'm like, excuse me, we're about to play a game against you. We're molded. We're tennis shoes. I don't care. But any advantage that you can get, that's what you want to do. I give him props for calling
Yeah,
Tom Brady.
Anyone that's been to 9 Super Bowls, that's won 6 of them, you want to pick as much of his brain as he possibly can. And I imagine Brady, if they do connect, will be very generous with his time. I would imagine that Brady probably would prefer his old protege, Jimmy Garoppolo, win this Super Bowl than the guy who's coming for his throne in the AFC, Patrick Mahomes. So, yeah, I'm absolutely in on this. It's the totally smart move by Jimmy Garoppolo.
All right, moving on from the Niners to the Chiefs. Offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy said every play is designed to score a touchdown. Kenny, you in or out on the Chiefs having the best offense to ever play in a Super Bowl?
Jenna, I'm out. I know a lot about being the best. It's subjective in terms of how people grade it, but I got to go back to the greatest show on turf, 99, 2000, 2001 Rams, where they were number one in points and yards, 2 Super Bowl appearances, 1 championship during that era. So I got to go with the Rams.
I'm out as well, and I for that same exact reason, I think it is the Rams, but they have so many different ways to hurt you. They can run the ball with Marshall Faulk down your throat as many times as they want to. Of course, they can displace Marshall Faulk and get him out in routes. Then you have Hall of Fame caliber receivers on the outside. Right now, Kansas City has a great team. They don't have a better offensive team than the Rams.
I disagree with you. I'm in because of the level of quarterback play. You're laughing at me. Only the 1990.
I'm laughing because I knew you were going to be in.
Well, I appreciate that you like my consistency of opinion. Only the 90 Bills scored more points in the playoffs leading up to the Super Bowl. This Chiefs team, almost all the same pieces. Last year was the third highest scoring team in the history of the NFL. And we have yet to see in these playoffs a team force them off the field via defense. Stop. What's happened is they've dropped the football. 18 drives of consequence, 12 touchdowns, 1 field goal, 5 third down drops. I think they're playing as well as any offense has going into a Super Bowl. Hopefully they'll have a better result than some of the other all-time great offenses, the 07 Patriots, the, what was it, 01 Rams that ran into the 2001 Patriots. Mm-hmm.
All right, on to Drew Brees now. The 41-year-old free agent quarterback said he's going to take a deep breath before making a 2020 decision. Kenny, you in or out on Brees returning to the Saints next season?
Jenna, I'm out. I mean, based on what it's going to cost the Saints and the production that you're getting from Drew Brees, I don't think that they need to run it back with him. They have viable replacements for him.
They got Teddy.
And I know people will point to the regular season stats, but I'll say this. The last 2 playoff runs for the Saints ended from Drew Brees' turnovers. Drew Brees is washed up, man. It's time for him to hang it up.
Enjoy
family life.
Kenny.
Wow.
Drew Brees, in my opinion, is more washed than Tom Brady. So, yeah.
Whoa!
Nick is saying he needs
that. We should have led the show with that take.
Nick is saying Brady should hang it up, then Drew Brees should hang it up. You heard it here first.
Yeah, we did.
I didn't see that coming. I'm going in. I'm saying that Drew Brees needs to finish the deal. I think he's a competitor. We see him every time he breaks a record, the motivational stuff that he says to his kids and to the football team. I don't think that type of player goes out in the fashion that they did losing the first round of the playoffs.
Listen, I don't know if Drew Brees can lead the Saints to a Super Bowl again, but I do think I don't think he's washed up. I still think he is at the very least, an above average quarterback, if not still a fringe top 10 quarterback. So I'm in. I am just still just reacting in the aftershock of that tape.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Yeah. If you're saying he can't lead them to a Super Bowl, why is he coming back when he's 40 years old?
Man, that $30 million to spend pretty good.
Do you think that's a wise way to spend $30 million if you're the Saints?
Man, I think
I'm asking you that question. Do you think that's wise? The value proposition of Drew Brees being a quarterback.
Probably not. Exactly. But that's not the question.
Okay, there it
but
is.
That's not the question. And I'm
Am I in or out on Drew Brees coming back to the Saints? No, because of what it's going to cost.
Clearly.
Versus what I'm going to get.
Wow.
Clearly.
No.
Listen, man, I respect the take.
Hang on.
He said he's worse than Brady.
Lamar Jackson broke Michael Vick's single-season rushing record for a quarterback this season, which prompted a Pro Bowl likely MVP honors and some catchphrases. So, Kenny, you went around on Lamar trademarking his phrase, not bad for a running back.
Jenna, I am. And just because that's what today's athletes are doing, I mean, they're cognizant, they're aware of being a brand a lot earlier in their sports careers. And so, yeah, this is just par for the course in terms of what Lamar is doing.
I love the fact that athletes can be a brand. I love the fact that they can make a lot of money outside of the game. But I'm out on this only because, to me, Lamar, you're past that now. You're past that point. Now it's all about getting better in your third year and how much better you can get from this year to next year. And that means throwing the football. This point that you're talking about, I'm not a running back, that's over with at this point. Now you have to be better as a quarterback in the pocket. That's the most important thing.
I understand your point. I'm in because I think both things can be true. He can be focused on one while cashing these checks for the other. I trademarked the phrase, that ain't great. Jenna doesn't know this. She actually owes me $1,700 for that.
For the
trademark infringement for all the times she said it. Yeah, man, if you got something people want to capitalize on, or you want to capitalize on, people want to pay you for, why not? Doesn't hurt nobody.
Your guy, absolutely. LeBron, tried to do it with Taco Tuesday. It didn't work.
That was it was maybe a bit of an overstep by LeBron. I think Taco Tuesday belongs to all of us. I don't think that can be individually his property. That's fine. I understand it was a heady play by him. He got rejected by the trademark courts. I understand that. But Lamar, absolutely.
We got to take a break. All right, let's move on to the Clippers. So when they added reigning finals MVP Kawhi Leonard and six-time All-Star Paul George this offseason, remember the conversation was how many titles could the Clippers win now? But in a year engulfed in load management, the conversation has quickly shifted. Reports are that some Clippers players are upset with the preferential treatment of Kawhi MPG-13. Nick, anything to this?
Who could have seen this coming? I mean, who in the world could have seen that you had a Clippers team that was totally together, that took the Warriors, the healthy Warriors, by the way, before any of the injuries got them, went to six games, and were building something, and then remade the entire team in an offseason, that if things didn't go as swimmingly well as most people predicted, there could be a little angst about it, particularly when you have your superstars, who always play by a slightly different set of rules, playing by a totally different set of rules than the rest of the team. And I don't think they're so much upset that Paul George, he had double shoulder surgery, then hurt his hamstring. Like, that is how it works in the league if you're dealing with an injury in any league. I think there's probably some players a little... And could Kawhi have played, a back-to-back, two back-to-backs? But what they're really upset with is this team is not as good as everyone said they were going to be. They're outside of the top five on offense. They're outside of the top five on defense. And I'm old enough to remember this Clippers team was going to be the best defense in basketball by a mile. They're on pace for 56 wins, which is good, but it ain't great. They are looking up in the standings and have been all year to the actual best team out west, the Los Angeles Lakers. And they've got the same number of losses as the Raptors, Celtics, and Nuggets. They have more losses than the Jazz and the Heat. That was not the plan here. So it's one thing we're going to load manage like Toronto did with Kawhi, right? They were 17-5 in the 22 games Kawhi missed last year, so it did not hurt them. They actually had a tick better winning percentage in the regular season in the games he sat than the games he played. That has not been the case for the Clippers. And so I don't blame if some of the players have some of the concerns I do, which is, yeah, this is all about winning a championship, but what if this process makes it harder for us to win a championship because we have a brutal round one matchup and we're on the road in round two of the postseason? I think that's where some of this is coming from, Canty.
Well, you're probably right, but here's the thing. I mean, all is not lost. You brought up in the offensive and defensive metrics. We knew it was going to take some time for this Clippers team to come around and to find their fair footing just because Kawhi was going to be in and out of the lineup with load management, and Paul George is coming off of offseason surgery. So, I mean, the core for the Toronto Raptors had been together for years before they introduced Kawhi Leonard, so you can understand why they'd be able to function a little bit better without him. They shipped off a lot of pieces from that Clippers team when they made the deal to bring over Paul George. So, I mean, there are some moving parts with this, and guys are getting adjusted to playing with one another. But I do think they're positioning themselves the best that they can in order to compete for a championship because they recognize what Kawhi Leonard was able to do down the stretch of the regular season, but more importantly in the postseason, knowing that you were managing the amount of minutes and the amount of game played in the regular season. So I think this is Doc Rivers taking a big picture view of this thing. The role players from the Clippers, they just got to understand what this is. I mean, star players have always gotten preferential treatments in sports, not just basketball, but in sports in general. I remember Jimmy Johnson, the head coach for the Dallas Cowboys, said, "I'll treat all the players fairly. I'm not going to treat everybody the same." I mean, as a defensive tackle, I knew that there were different rules for me in comparison to the quarterbacks that I played with. Why? Because a quarterback is more important to the team's success than the defensive tackle is. The same way that Kawhi Leonard and Paul George are more important to the Clippers' success than any of those other role players. So I understand where those other guys from the Clippers are coming from, but they also, I got to understand, there's a bigger picture to this thing. And if you trust Doc Rivers and you trust the people in the Clippers' front office, then you got to trust how they handle this situation with Kawhi and PG-13.
Is this fixable? Because he's going to continue to be load managed. Yeah, so that's not going to change. So this is the way it's going to be.
The solution for the Clippers is what they have cornered themselves in this place where it is, you can say it's always championship or bust, but anything short of a title. And this whole year is an abject failure for them because they have said, without saying it, but through their actions, we don't care about the regular season. It is all focused on the fact we think this puts us in the best position to win a championship. So if you're a Clippers fan and you're being told the first 82 games don't matter because it's the last 20 to 25 that all that we care about, if instead of getting to 20 to 25 in games in the postseason to ring, you get 12 and a second round exit, then it is worse than the typical disappointing second round exit. It's, we got nothing out of this. And by the way, after this year, Kawhi and Paul George got one more year left on each of their contracts guaranteed. Then they can do whatever they want. And you mentioned Doc Rivers. And one other point on Doc, and I know everybody likes Doc, and he used to be in the media, and he seems like a really good guy, all these things. It should be noted, Doc Rivers has coached some really good teams. In the 2010, since 2010, he's been in the conference finals once. He's coached 11 playoff series in his career without Kevin Garnett on his team. They're 2-9, his teams, in those 11 playoff series. So is Doc going to Ubuntu his way to fixing this like he did with the Celtics? I don't know. And I know that superstars get preferential treatment. I do think there are players on the Clippers saying, why are our superstars treated not so much differently than us, but so much differently than Giannis, then James Harden, then LeBron James, then Anthony Davis? It's not that the Clippers are treating their superstars like all superstars get treated. They're treating their superstar, because it's not Paul George. He has a surgery and then an injury. Kawhi Leonard is in a box by himself this NBA season, and the only way to unwrap it and come out of it a winner is to win the whole damn thing. I wish him luck. I don't think they're going to be able to do it, and I think it's going to recalibrate the whole league's approach to load management. When the two teams who have taken the regular season seriously, the Bucks and the Lakers, end up with coasts in the first round, the Bucks maybe the whole Eastern Conference playoffs, and they end up being rested for the NBA Finals when they meet each other, and these other teams are like, oh, maybe the regular season does matter a little bit more than we were led to believe.
Maybe Nick was right.
We'll see.
I watched that show.
We'll see.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.